Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Listen up because it is 2022. Can you believe it? So Wake Up America is the American dream on the verge of the American nightmare. Well, we're going to find out. Happy New Year to everyone in America and around the world. And may 2022 be a year of working for freedom, liberty, rights, free will, free choice to control your own bodies and your own minds and that of your minor children. And if you're a guardian for your parents or grandparents as well, everyone in the world was given a natural, God-given, inalienable right to free will and free choice upon birth by God. So remember that. And no one person or several people should have control over our bodies and our minds when we believe that what they are telling us to do is not legal, lawful, constitutional, and could harm us physically, financially, or emotionally, or our families and our American family or people around the world. We are all one big family, right? Right. So the world's getting smaller, and so I want to wish everybody everywhere freedom. Never give up hope. Even if you live in a tyrannical country, never give up hope. Be blessed with health, prosperity, and a loving year with lots of laughter with family and friends. Because remember, laughter makes the heart and mind grow lighter and puts life's events, no matter what we're dealing with, in perspective. So God gave us laughter, and laughter actually keeps us healthy as well. So we always want to remember that. And today, we are going to enter into the world of authors and experts. And then on part two, we'll talk about the issues of the day. And today's dynamic guest is Yvonne Wakefield, and she is the author of Babe in the Woods. It's a self-portrait. It's book two, and it's a very intriguing story about an 18-year-old. Her name, Yvonne, set out to build a home from the trees on 80 acres she bought on an Oregon mountainside. Now, that is amazing, so you won't want to miss her story. In 1975, log by log, she created a cabin and hills from an orphaned past, finding a new family in the forest and with people in a valley named John Day. Very, very interesting woman, and as a young girl, a very adventurous young girl who decided to build a cabin on 80 acres of land, log by log. How many males would do that, let alone a female? So I really want to find out more about her story. And it will also touch people who don't feel that their parents were around for them, or maybe were orphaned or foster kids, and even adults, because that grows up I mean, when you grow up, that stays in the back of your mind, and something that people just live with. And so this is a very intriguing book, Babe in the Woods, Book 2, Self-Portrait with Yvonne Wakefield. And we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts, but first we're going to take a break. So stay tuned and don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
That's right. Be sure to bring your appetite to the Horseshoe Cafe.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hey, everyone. If you just tuned in, Happy New Year. Hope it's blessed and healthy and filled with laughter and love and health and friendship and so forth for everyone around the world. And now we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts, which you wait for every Wednesday noon to 1 p.m. We're on the air. And today's dynamic guest is Yvonne Wakefield, and she's sharing her book, Babe in the Woods, Book 2, Self-Portrait. And let me tell you just a little bit. I already mentioned some wonderful things about Yvonne Wakefield and her book and her experiences. Yvonne is a woman who struck out on her own at the age of 18 to build a log cabin, log by log, in the woods of Oregon. Now she's in her 60s, and her story is a remarkable journey that we all can learn from, whether you're young or older, mature. So let's get started, and let's say hello to our very special guest and welcome her. Welcome, Yvonne Wakefield, to Columbo Chronicles, and I hope that you're having a very happy new year in 2022 so far.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on the show. And actually, I am snowed in Oregon right now.
Oh, my goodness. And we have sunshine
That's
here.
That's how the new year started here.
So we're two different weathers here going on, two different weather agendas. Well, Yvonne, I found your book very, very intriguing and interesting and different from the average 18-year-old or even an orphan or foster child or adult who grew up and didn't believe their parents were around. So I was wondering if you would tell us a little bit about what happened when you had a vision the night that your mom died at the age of 14.
Well, yes, my father had died when I was 5 years earlier. And so the night that my mother died, officially designating me an orphan, I wondered where I was going to be the next day, the next week, the next month. The future was so uncertain. And this idea came to me, if I could survive until I was an adult age, I would take what inheritance I had and buy a case of cold duck, which is sparkly sweet red wine, get a kitten, mm-hmm. and go to the mountains and build a log cabin and write and make art. And so the next 4 years in the system was really difficult, but I kept myself from succumbing by keeping this idea alive. And then when I was 18, I took what inheritance I had and set out to find land in Oregon and eventually purchased 80 acres in the wilderness. And then later that year went up and began to build this log cabin. And prior to that, I think the only thing I built was in a high school wood shop, one of those cradles you sit on or lay on when you go under cars. So I had basically no carpentry experience. I had books. I'd read books, how-to books, and that's how I began that journey.
And did you do this totally by yourself?
No, I started to, but it soon found a man named Jim who I hired to help me, and he actually became like a father figure, a mentor. And he and I, along with sometimes the neighbors would come up and help lift things, basically built this log cabin. And this was off the grid before off the grid was even really a term. There's no electricity up there. The running water is you run down to the creek with buckets and get it. And the only mechanized tool we had was chainsaw. Everything else was done by hand. We hand drilled the rebar that set the logs. Notching was all done by hatchet or axe. We did have some people come up and pull the logs out of the forest with a tractor. Other than that, everything was manual labor.
My goodness. And so where did you stay while the cabin was being built?
At first, I stayed in this really little rat shack. Half a mile below was an old log cabin used by a homesteader. And then as soon as the snow melted, I stayed in a pup tent.
Wow.
And Oregon mountain weather is unpredictable. So sometimes you'd be working all day long, and like even in July it snowed once. You'd be working in this inclement weather, and you'd be cold and you'd be wet, and then you'd go down to this little pup tent. It was too wet to even make a fire. And then on the contrast, you know, you had beautiful clear days. So it was pretty raw.
I'll say. And so what was it like living without electricity, phones, computers, or running water, and being all alone?
It's not as romantic as everybody thinks, like, oh, she's living in this log cabin, which, by the way, is not my primary residence. I have a beautiful, brand-new home with computers and everything, and I still have the property in the cabin. I still go there, and it's still the same as it was when I was 18. I mean, I'm even using the same buckets to get water from the creek. But you have to do a lot of pre-planning. Like, if I go out at night, I have to have matches laid out. I light by kerosene lamp lights. I have to have the mantles off. So as soon as I step in, I light one match, and then I can light, like, three lamps with one match. And, you know, it's always having enough firewood and tinder split and on the porch. Having enough water, and I always keep a couple extra buckets on the porch just in case. And, you know, it's all manual. When I'm
and
away
so did
there,
you learn, oh, I'm sorry, did you learn to do these things as time went on, or did you just automatically have instinct to do these things?
I think basically on survival, that's what you do. You just have to figure out how to do them, and now it's so rote. But it's still as physically demanding because you're not only hauling everything and the energy used to split wood and fall trees, but everything has to be carried and you're on uneven slopes. So, you know, if I'm gone for more than a couple of weeks, at least you got there twice a month, within 2 days I can feel myself harden up from just all the physical exercise.
Mm-hmm. And were you afraid of bears up there in the woods?
When I first moved up there when I was 18, I was afraid of the dark. And there's like, if you had to go to the bathroom at night, you had to go outside, and it was really kind of scary. So I forced myself when I first moved up there to go outside and stand, just to listen and to attune my senses to pitch black. And then later on, when I felt comfortable with that, I would take short walks. And each night, I would longer. And adjust my mind to the fact that that tree stump is not a bear, even though it, in the dark, you know, you make out this dark shape and it could be a wild animal. And then so eventually I became really accustomed to the night, and I was like sometimes hike a mile or two in the pitch black. So I was never afraid of bears until I actually had experiences with them. And in the second book, Babe in the Woods, Self-Portrait, I talk about having to deal with rogue bears and eventually dispatching one because it was a life, you know, life-threatening.
Absolutely. I just watched a video on being a daughter and a father that were taking a walk in the woods. It was pretty eye-awakening. And so what happens? I mean, you learn all of these skills. So what practical advice on building, water usage, and living big on a little can you give to the audience who are adventurers?
Well, basically, what I learned at an early age from being up there is you can live very big on so little. You can get by on 5 or 10 gallons of water a day for your washing and your cooking. And now, what it takes that to flush one toilet. And because all the food I had was normally, especially when the snow came, was backpacked up on my back, you learn to eat simply. And one thing I learned then, in retrospect, I was thinking, in the winter when I had to backpack all my food up, I don't remember dealing with garbage. And that's because I didn't generate anything. Back then, maybe I used a couple of cans, but everything was like fresh vegetables, apples, cheese. I ate very simply and made my own bread. And kind of that's the same diet I still follow, is kind of eating fresh and simply. And that came about because it was born of necessity, because I didn't have refrigeration, and I had to rely on what I could carry up on my back. And so during the pandemic, when the pandemic first started, I thought, oh my God, how am I going to make through this? My husband had recently died, and I'm in this big house by myself, and I didn't know how I'd do with the isolation. And then I went, you know what? I have a refrigerator full of food. I have scotch. I have wine. I have Netflix. And I have electricity you can turn on with a switch, and water that comes out of a faucet. I'm in heaven compared to, you know, how I had lived before. So that's one way that I framed my mental health in the pandemic. And I still do. Like, I was talking to a friend today. I said, you know, we've been snowed in here. And I said, but you know what? I'm warm. I'm mentally healthy. I'm physically healthy. And I've got food. And so I'm okay. And I think it was the early lesson that taught me all of that. And I carry that pretty much how I act today.
So positive thinking, too, is part of your survival techniques and that you've learned, too. So it's very important to have positive outlook when things look dim. And I'm sorry about your husband passing. And so what are the benefits of living without technical distractions? Can people actually concentrate on listening to and learning from the land, the soil, the earth?
Oh, I definitely believe that. And let me give you an example. When I was an art teacher in Kuwait for 6 years, a university professor, so I was tied to a cell phone and computer. When I went to the cabin for that summer, I heard there's no cell phone reception up there, but I heard my phone ring, and so I slapped my back pocket to get the phone and realized there's no phone in my pocket. What it was, there was a trilling of a bird, which sounded like my phone. So I was so Pavlovian, you know, connected to that sound that my whole nervous system responded to, like, as a phone ring. So when I go up there now, and all the time. I'm not really on like a streaming person. I try to avoid as much as I can on the phone and the computer, but it's necessary in my business. But it takes me about a day to kind of like lose the twitchiness that at least I get, like those immediate responses that you have with your phone, with your computer, with your Google. It takes that time for me to process it out and feel comfortable again. It's okay to stand around and listen. It's okay to stand on the porch and just look at the trees for 10 minutes. You know, you don't have to be doing something all the time. And that's also one of the reasons I go up there a lot. It's just to kind of like have a mental anima from technology.
I think that's important for children too, especially today, because they're all attached to their phones, looking down at their phones, not looking around them, not enjoying nature like you're talking about, the trees, the animals, the butterflies. I did when I was a kid. I was outside chasing butterflies and looking at all the varieties and all that stuff, and liking to roll in the grass and all that, which everybody appears now. And they're teaching through the schools, you have to have a phone, you have to have a computer. So there's really not that one-on-one communication or that time alone with yourself, your mind, and your body and nature. So I think that is very important. I totally agree with you that you have to put your phone down once in a while and just take a break and, like you say, take a walk in the woods. And so
and leave your phone.
Yeah, leave your phone at home. So how do you think that people from other corners of the world, like you said, Kuwait, accept your information on environment and land and listening and art?
Oh, that's a hard one to answer. When I taught university-age Muslim women, I really didn't talk about my art or my cabin experience or my life in the United States. So basically interacted with them on our level, which was in college and around art. But a lot of my students are similar. A lot of my students there are similar, very similar to students all over the world. I mean, they are on their phones. They go to the malls. They like to drive. They like boys. So we basically never talked about that. But I would take them out on field trips, which was not something commonly done. And I'd take them out in like on an island, Persian Gulf. Or I take them out in the desert to do sketching. Oh, and I take them off campus to go sketching outside, which was a rarity because normally they had to be escorted by a male relative. So to have an American woman take them out in a different environment was a logistical problem.
Mm. So what was your interest in Kuwait? And the women in Kuwait?
Well, I was hired by the Kuwait government to be an art professor at Kuwait University's College for Women. And I went and I taught art to women. I taught art theory. Okay. I taught practicum, studio art. And I actually wrote a book on that, and that is Suitcase Filled with Nails, Lessons Learned from Teaching Art in Kuwait.
Very good. And so let me ask you this. How would your paintings, your painting, A Full Moon, become a catalyst and a theme for your art?
The painting, The Full Moon, I started in the valley below my cabin. Actually, I was inspired by The Full Moon because I realized something was keeping me awake up at the cabin. And then I realized it was The Full Moon. So when I realized that, I started to go out and paint it. And I work from a preset palette, and you can see a little bit when you paint, but not a lot. So I paint from interpretation. and they're very visceral paintings, lots of thick paint, lots of expression. And that started me into more landscape. So I kind of like channel what I feel like. I don't like to use the word channel, but it's kind of what I do. I channel what spirit I feel from the land into the paint. So when I was in Kuwait, there was no landscape really to paint, and it wasn't safe to go out. So I found pomegranates, and I started for 6 years over there. I painted paintings of pomegranates because in the fruit, when it was broken open, I could find the same valleys and vistas and plateaus and the emotional charge that I get from painting landscape. So the full moon was the catalyst for all that.
That's interesting because pomegranates actually are very good for your health. I just read by a doctor online who's talking about pomegranates. And when I was a kid, we used to steal them off the overflow of the branches when we're walking to school. And remember, they'd yell at us. So that pomegranate brought up some memories. So do you feel that helping kids and other people with art makes them more confident in themselves?
Oh, definitely. And I'm not actively teaching anymore, but I do take on kids' special needs. And there was one particular student who I'm still working with. I've worked with her now for 8 years, who was born with a genetic disorder and was totally nonverbal when we started working. But I could see something inside of her. And that's when we started working together. So over the course of the years, she's not only become really verbal, but she's had three exhibitions in galleries and was the youngest person on a local art studio tour. And that's given her confidence. And it's not only given her confidence, but it's given her a direction. That's where she wants to go in her life. And I've seen that happen with other people, other adults, with other, you know, adolescents I've worked with. It gives them a direction. It gives them an outlet. It gives them a validation.
Probably makes them realize they have a talent they may not have even known they had as well. We're talking to Yvonne Wakefield. Babe in the Woods is her dynamic book. It's book 2 of 3. It's self-portrait. And if you just tuned in, it's how she built a home at the age of 18 from trees on 80 acres that she bought in Oregon, log by log. Very interesting story. Can you tell us any particular incident in your book that you could share with the audience without giving away the story, but an incident that you could share with our audience that you found intriguing or funny or adventurous?
Oh, well, sometimes it was the simplest things. Of course, there's the bear story, which I never had to deal with before. But I think, you know what it would be for me? It would be meeting some of the local people and how we came from very different backgrounds. A lot of them were, you know, depression raised with not much, and how helpful and generous they were with me. And it was because of the help of so many locals that I survived that first year. So I think that would be one good story that not only changed me, it's helped my, it's expanded my direction on communicating with people and understanding people.
And so, like, when you you were a child and you became an orphan, and did that, was that a serious burden on you? It seemed like, of course it would be. Or did you block it out and just decide, I'm going to become this strong woman and build this log cabin? How did you overcome being an orphan and finding love and feeling like you had some family?
First of all, I don't think you ever, at least I've never overcome that. I blocked it out by moving forward, and that was the first book, Building a Life One Log at a Time. And the people that came into my life up at the mountain, actually kind of, I learned to trust again in those people. They weren't there to take from me. They weren't there to abuse me. They were genuinely there to help me. And that's that story.
That's a great story, because I always say sometimes people who have a little give a lot, and sometimes people who have a lot give a little. And so I think this proves that sometimes people who had a little and they appreciate what they have are willing to help other people and provide them with love and friendship and help when they need it. I think that that's a very important point that you just made. And so now that we're coming to the end of this wonderful human nature story, Yvonne Wakefield, it's your time to shine. And you have a minute or more, if you like, to tell the audience any message you'd like, why they should purchase the book, where they can purchase it, or any information, contact information you'd like to share.
Okay, yeah, well, and this book, Babe in the Woods, Self-Portrait, is the second in a three-book series, Babe in the Woods, Building a Life, One Log at a Time, is the first book, and I'm about ready to send the third to the editor right now that takes us up to the pandemic. But Babe in the Woods, Self-Portrait just won the Book Publishers of Southern California Irwin Award for Best Memoir, and you can find more about me on my website, which is YvonnePepinWakefield.com. So it's YvonnePepinWakefield.com. And it also takes you to my studio. So I'm not only an author, but I'm a visual artist. And I'm on Facebook at Yvonne Wakefield, Facebook at Babe in the Woods. And I think, you can buy my books wherever books are sold. And I'm also always available for speaking at book conferences, because I do a lot of book groups, some of them online, some I actually go to. So enjoy the book if you like it. Please review it. Reviews are always helpful. And I appreciate you allowing me to be on your show.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and I wish you much success with book one, two, and number three coming up in 2022. That's wonderful. And Yvonne Wakefield, you'll have to come back and tell us about book number three, and we'll do it again. So,
all right, thank you so
year,
much.
And thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You too, Rose. Bye-bye.
And Yvonne Wakefield has left the building. And be sure to look her up online, Yvonne Wakefield and Babe in the Woods. And I assume it's on Amazon.com as well as on her website. So check it out. And on that note, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to enter into the world of issues of the day.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up to Columbo Chronicles Live. And we're going to enter into the world of politics, issues of the day. And we just left
the corner and world of authors and experts. On Health Impact News, it states, crisis in America, deaths up 40% among young people 18 to 64, based on life insurance claims for 2021 after the COVID-19 vaccine rolled out. And it says, finally, the elephant in the room that nobody wanted to discuss in 2021 regarding labor shortages and supply chain bottlenecks, which is that record number of younger people in the workforce dying after the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccines and can no longer be swept under the rug, as statistics are being published that reveal a huge crisis developing in the United States of America, which raises the question, in my mind, is it happening in Europe and other countries? Because India is filing a lawsuit, and has filed a lawsuit against Bill Gates for crimes against humanity. And the interesting part about that is they have to go through specific procedures in their country before they serve the alleged defendants. And this article caught my attention because I've read so many articles and watched so many videos of parents and crying because their children were healthy athletes, active, healthy kids, and they either died, God rest their souls, after they were vaccinated, or they were seriously injured after they were vaccinated with heart attacks, strokes, heart inflammation, Guillain-Barre syndrome, a brain injury, profuse bleeding around the brain, blood clots, and so forth. And this, to me, would be a red flag immediately, because when the swine flu was reported to have 12 people die from the swine flu under the Obama-Biden administration, they ended the jabs, the vaccinations. In this case, I call them jabs or injections because they are experimental and trial injections with mRNA gene therapy that has never been used on humans with unknown consequences to the humans, as well as a whistleblower who blew the whistle on and was a Pfizer employee who blew the whistle on Pfizer's trade secret formula they're injecting into human beings without disclosing what's in it, which to me is crimes against humanity. Because if you have an experiment in the past and there is a FDA policy that states clearly up into 2021 when they rolled out these vaccines, which I term experimental and trial injections or jabs, the policy was that you had to have a willing volunteer. Usually they were paid to be a willing volunteer of sound mind. They couldn't be a minor child or an elderly person on medications and who they're jabbing now, and with dementia and Alzheimer's, and so forth. They had to be of sound mind, and they had to be informed of what was being injected or chemicals, adjuvants, secret formulas. There were no secret formulas, to my knowledge, because they had informed the person of what was being injected, whether it was a therapy or a chemical or an adjuvant into their bodies. And then they had to inform them of the risk of temporary or permanent injury for life, or
which would include even a brain injury, which meant if you're permanently injured, then you would need lifetime caregiving, which is very expensive. And a lot of people don't have insurance or aren't covered under the government Medicare, Medi-Cal, Medicaid, whatever it is that covers long-term caregiving for disabled persons. And so you had to know the risk. And the other was, of course, the alternate death. And then at that point, you had to sign a consent form as a willing participant, generally paid, of sound mind, totally informed of what was being injected into their bodies and the risk. And then came the signed consent form. That isn't happening today. So the head of Indianapolis-based insurance company One America said, the death rate is up a stunning 40% from pre-pandemic levels among working age people. And you're talking about people, and I have family members and friends who have businesses who can't get enough employees to come to work after the lockdowns. We are seeing right now the highest death rates we have seen in the history of this business, not just at One America. The company CEO Scott Davison said during an online news conference this week, the data is consistent across every player in that business. Davison said the increase in deaths represents huge, huge numbers, and that it's not just elderly people who are dying, but primarily working age people 18 to 64, who are the employees of companies that have group life insurance plans through One America. And what we saw just in the third quarter, we're seeing it continue into the fourth quarter, is that death rates up 40% over what they were pre-pandemic, he said. Just to give you an idea how bad that is, a three sigma or a 1-in-200-year catastrophe would be 10% increase over pre-pandemic, he said. So 40% is just unheard of. Most of the claims for deaths being filed are not classified as COVID-19 deaths, Davison said. Now, that's interesting. What the data is showing to us is that the deaths that are being reported as COVID deaths greatly understate the actual death losses among working age people from the pandemic. It may not all be COVID on their death certificate, but deaths are just huge, huge numbers since they rolled out the vaccines. The increase in insurance claims are not solely related to death, according to Davis, but disability claims are also increasing. He said at the same time, the company is seeing an uptick in disability claims. And saying that at first it was short-term disability, and now the increase is in long-term disability claims. For One America, we expect the cost of this are going to be well over $100 million. And this is our smallest business, so it's having a huge impact on that. Scott Davison made his comments last week during an online news conference, and he was not the only speaker. Brian Tabor, the president of the Indiana Hospital Association, was also present, and in a follow-up interview, he confirmed that what Davison was seeing in insurance claims was supported on the front end in the hospital. Brian Tabor, the president of the Indiana Hospital Association, said, hospitals across the state are being flooded with patients with many different conditions, saying, unfortunately, the average Hoosier's health has declined during the pandemic. In a follow-up call, he said he did not have a breakdown showing why so many people in the state are being hospitalized, for what conditions or ailments. But he said the extraordinarily high death rate, quoted by Davison, masks what hospitals in the state are seeing. What confirmed to me is a bore out, what we're seeing on the front end. And Dr. Lindsay Weaver, Indiana's chief medical officer, said at a recent news conference with Governor Eric Holcomb that hospitalizations have increased after the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccines. Now, this is interesting because CDC and WHO and Dr. Fauci, DHHS, the Surgeon General, White House, all of these people who are invested in big pharma and patents on vaccines and in the business of making billions of dollars on vaccines, including big pharma CEOs, are all saying it's a coincidence or there's no proof that the deaths, the increase of deaths and injuries, which I just read were the injuries were over a million who have been vaccinated, and are not related to these experimental and trial injections on the human lab rats who are under fear and threat and coerced to get the experimental and trial injections, or else they'll lose their jobs, they'll be isolated, they'll be denied constitutional rights, freedoms, liberties, they will be impoverished, they won't be able to travel, they won't be able to see their families. Well, that is tyranny and totalitarianism and authoritarianism and communism. That is not Americanism. And it definitely isn't their sworn oath for those elected and appointed into office to uphold, defend, protect, and preserve the Constitution of the United States of America and the health and welfare and safety of every legal and natural-born American in this country. Well, we have watched them, these billionaires, buy up farmland during the lockdowns because they're invested in Monsanto and they want to grow GMO, non-nutritional, lab, genetically grown lab seeds and foods and molecular meats and control the food market. So when they lock down the country, they close the restaurants, the bars who serve food, and destroyed the trucking business just about, and broke down the food chain. I mean, it's my opinion that it appears to be by design for the CEOs of wealthy corporations to control the planet with fewer people on the planet, because the Gates are involved in supporting and funding, including Gates' parents, his wife, in supporting Planned Parenthood, funding Planned Parenthood. And under Obamacare, they secretly inserted mandated taxpayer-funded abortions worldwide, not just in America, worldwide. And that was under Obama, Biden, Feinstein, Kerry, Hillary Clinton, CFR, who approved that on or about December 7th, and then in 2009, it was added as an executive order, and then it was inserted into Obamacare. So that is a depopulation program of natural-born babies, and that would reduce the number of babies who grow up to be children, who grow up to be adults, to preserve nations. If you don't have babies and children, more babies and children dying now since the vaccines rolled out and through Planned Parenthood, millions and millions of babies, 70 million just in America alone, 40 million in China, and so forth. You don't have babies being born and children in sovereign nations, you will not have sovereign nations. So that appears to be part of the design as well,
so that they will have no sovereign nations, so they will have a global planet, and they will control the global planet with fewer people. And they also invest in transhumans, which are neither male or female, and they can't procreate. They also invest in public schools, so they indoctrinate little children into transhuman indoctrination, as well as same-sex indoctrination, and that abortions are no big deal, and those are all depopulation programs. So common sense should be used when a million Americans are now disabled who were healthy, and there's a 40% increase of deaths in 2021, according to insurance companies and hospitals. And the age group isn't just the elderly any longer. It's including young people and middle-aged people. And it was Dr. Fauci who stated that they were going to start jabbing babies in 2022. So those are things to think about. And there's another article here I wanted to mention. Let's see if that's it. Moderna announces first participant dosed in phase one studies of its mRNA Epstein-Barr virus vaccine. I mean, this is a never-ending vaccinations. How many chemicals can your body withstand before it destroys your immune system? Think about that. Doctors say that the chemicals and the mRNA spike proteins that they're jabbing into people, and then the Pfizer secret formula that they refuse to disclose, and the government gives them 75 years to disclose it, how grossly negligent is that? That they are injecting ingredients into people's bodies. They don't even know what's being injected into their bodies. While they're raking in billions and billions, and they have no, they have 100% immunity from any injuries or deaths around the world. So why did America, Israel, and the UK sign contracts with Pfizer using our tax dollars in the billions and theirs to distribute experimental and trial injections on human lab rats, which is unprecedented in the United States of America and possibly around the world? Because that is a Nuremberg Code violation, and that is crimes against humanity, crimes against the United States Constitution. And in my opinion, the vaccine passport overthrows the United States Constitution, which Bill Gates and his Guidos, wealthy Guidos, have no authority to do, because that is attacking our Constitution of the United States of America and replacing it with the vaccine communist CCP vaccine passport that equates to the CCP China Merit app, where they control, spy, and track their citizens and determine who can buy or sell, who can go to school, who can go to college, or who can buy a house, and who can buy food, who can get medical care or not, based on their merits, like a credit card where they have the credits. And so they control all their system. So they're trying to bring that over to America. People are doing business with China. And China is making megabucks off of those ethylene oxide masks they've been sending over here, and those ethylene oxide PCR tests that even the developers have said are faulty and they weren't intended to detect COVID. And ethylene oxide, if you look it up, it is a poison to human beings. And the FDA has labels on products with ethylene oxide saying if you breathe it in or you swallow it, you need to call 911 because it could cause lung damage, breathing problems,
rashes, and so forth. Well, some of the symptoms are very similar to COVID. So are they giving COVID to people through chemicals that are poisonous to humans? What's really happening behind the scenes that Americans are not knowing about? And then breaking in Georgia, investigators have ballot trafficker who is talking, admits into being paid thousands in 2020 election ballot, election ballot boxes where ballots were abused by a harvesting scheme. 242 ballot traffickers detected. So all of these, they keep calling MSM and big giant social media, calling people with sound minds who think outside the box and have critical thinking and do their homework and research, conspiracy theories. It's because they are taking the truth and they're twisting it and pointing the finger at the right, and they're calling them domestic terrorists and conspiracy theorists and debunking them because Bill Gates and his wealthy Guidos, they buy airtime in the millions and millions to have a worldwide platform for their narratives. And so all those parrots who are called talk show hosts are parroting the script. So this radio host, John Fredericks, joined Steve Bannon back in September to discuss an explosive development in Georgia. Did you know that in the 90s, Georgia bought guillotines, thousands of guillotines? And under President G.W. Bush and Vice President Cheney, they were secretly building private prisons, private juvenile facilities, and FEMA camps in America. And under Obama and Biden, they were buying up with our taxes. All this is with our taxes. FEMA trains. Because I called my rep. They didn't want to give me the information in D.C. Finally, they broke down and said, well, the only thing we could tell you is, yes, Obama's buying FEMA trains with our taxes, with U.S. taxes. That's all the information they said they knew. So it's amazing how much the people we pay to protect us don't know and don't ask. According to John Fredericks' investigators, they have a video of 240 leftist operatives he called ballot traffickers, dumping tens of thousands of ballots into drop boxes in the middle of the night in locations across Georgia during the 2020 elections. The leftist operatives were identified making numerous drops in the middle of the night in Georgia. They were filmed emptying their backpacks of ballots into the drop boxes in the middle of the night. Ballot harvesting is not legal in Georgia. This was a criminal behavior caught on video. And you can read the rest of that article on the gatewaypundit.com. And on that note, with that happy news in the news, I have to say goodbye, but I just want to say God bless our first responders. God bless our police. God bless our sheriff. And hopefully we can weed out any bad apples. And we can work with our sheriffs, with our police. We need them. We cannot have a civilized nation without them. And or our first responders, all the angels who work in the hospitals and the nursing homes, God bless you. Thank you for all you do to save lives. And God bless you too, everyone in the United States of America and around the world. And may God place his hand on America and protect our wonderful, great republic. We are not a democracy. We are a republic. Our great republic operated by the rule of law. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo, signing off until next Wednesday.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.